In 1990, I was 28, living in Dallas as a professional dancer, choreographer, living my best gay life, dancing as if my life depended on it, because it did, because I did no longer want to be in Baltimore. In July of 1990, I get a call from my mom who says to me, "Eric, you have to come home because Boo Boo," we affectionately called him my brother Charles, "was dying from AIDS." Now, you know, if you don't remember, I remember so vividly that AIDS was that dreadful disease that killed so many of my gay friends, that stopped. It was as if Donna Summers was singing "Last Dance, Last Chance for Love." And then the needle on the record made this skirk sound. And all the partying stopped. Now, my brother wasn't gay, but I didn't know then that he was a functional drug addict that shared needles. So my mother's instructions was to get home as fast as I can. But there was no grand jeté. For those who don't understand ballet, means a big leap to get me in Baltimore in time. And my brother passed before I got there. So I did the funeral thing and ran back to Dallas to continue my life as a dancer. Around about 6 months after my brother's death, I started not feeling well. And you know that one thing about not feeling well, there's a difference of not feeling well. Sometimes, you know, you may have a little cold, but I had just not feeling well where something was just not right. And automatically I thought, "Oh no, don't tell me I have AIDS." Now, fear is a powerful thing. Fear will simply paralyze you to do nothing. It took me a whole year to go to be tested. I remember going to Cedar Springs in Dallas, that's the gay strip, and this nondescript building. Got inside, and everything was so secretive. You didn't give names, they gave you numbers. I had my blood drawn with the instructions of, they will call me in about 10 days for the results. 10 days of fear, 10 days of hell. I remember going back for my results, and some guy was sitting across the table from me that I can't remember what he looked like. And all I could hear him say was, "I'm sorry, your results were positive." He said a bunch of stuff after that, but it was all womp, 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 womp. I was looking above his head out of the window, and there was a bar. And I just simply thinking, "Damn, I need a drink." Now, in the bar, sipping my first, second, third vodka gimlet, I started thinking, how in the hell am I going to tell my mother this? She just lost her son. I'm going to tell her. And I didn't. I called my sister. See, my sister and I are 2 years apart, and we have always been extremely close. I called my sister and told her the news, and she said, "Come home. Come back to Baltimore. Johns Hopkins have all these studies going on. Come back." I took the snail way home. It took me 3 years to come to Baltimore. To be honest, I was coming home to die. See, because there was no medication, no treatment, no cure. You just died. And so my family owned this assisted living house. And in the house were six patients and this girl named Debbie. Have you ever just fell in love with somebody the first time you met them? Debbie was beautiful, a beautiful smile, but her spirit was just as beautiful as she was. Debbie and I became instantly friends. One day I was in Debbie's room with her. We was listening to music, and I shared my secret. I said, "Hey, Debbie, I'm HIV positive. And she whispered, me too. Now, Debbie was already connected with a place called Park West Medical Center. So Debbie was actually in the house because Debbie was just getting off of drugs. And so my sister was telling Debbie that, you know, my sister was a recovering addict and had a few years under her belt and said, Debbie, you could stay here as long as you stay clean and go to NA meetings. So Debbie said, oh, I got this place to go. And she grabbed me by my hand and dragged me to Park West Medical Center. Debbie was an angel sent to me because I was drowning and dying. So she took me to Park West Medical Center, and Park West Medical Center had these support groups for people living with HIV and many people who would die from HIV. And you just learned all that I needed to learn to try to survive. And there was this woman named Anna Blücher who was a social worker. And I just remember her so well because she had such compassion and such love and such empathy. It was all I needed at that time. And then Debbie sent me, introduced me to this doctor called Dr. Donald Barcell, who had the bedside manner of Marcus Welby. Y'all too young, you don't remember. But I was getting sicker and weaker. In 1995, I had 95 T cells. And for y'all who don't know about T-cells, that's like walking in the middle of the street, slipping on a banana, one foot up in the air, and a speeding truck coming. It was impending doom. I was getting weak. And I remember getting a call from Dr. Barcell, and he said, hey, Eric, there's this new medicine. They call it the antiretroviral, blah, 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 blah. It's a cocktail. And I need you to start right away. But let me tell you, it's not going to be easy. The medicine came. I said, no shit. It was 32 pills a day. Now, remember, just not feeling well. Just feeling bad, laying in bed day after day. And just thinking each day, making a new affirmation that if I just can swallow and relax just one more day. Just one more day, Eric. That was one of the hardest things I've done in my life. So one day, laying in bed, Debbie at my side, we were watching TV. 6 months later, into my 32-pill-day regimen, Dr. Purcell called and said, hey, there's this new study. You can cut it in half. I did a grand jeté and a few pirouettes. It was as if that statement had changed my whole life. You know, I never thought that I would live to see that type of fear, that type of isolation, that type of death, that type of hopelessness, that type of not trusting the medical system, that type of people turning their backs on one another until COVID came. And I got that too. But guess what? I survived it like I did HIV. So I'm going to close with saying this. Debbie and I were the first peer counselors for HIV at University of Maryland. Debbie left about a year and a half after doing it. I've been there 20 years. I have changed positions so many times. Now I am the eligibility specialist for the grant for Ryan White at the newly named Thrive program. And I owe all this to an angel named Debbie. And so I just want to say thank you, Debbie, for your love. Thank you just for being there for me. And I miss you. And guess what, Debbie? I only take one pill a day. Thank you.